The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening. This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Good evening. Shortly before we began taping tonight's show, we learned about the horrific events here in New York City. It appears a terrorist has attacked innocent citizens in Lower Manhattan. And all of our hearts, all of our broken hearts, go out to everyone affected and to all those who live and work in this great city. Tomorrow and the next day, New Yorkers will wake up to new details about what happened. But tomorrow and the next day, New Yorkers will also wake up and keep going. Because in an uncertain world, one thing is for sure. New Yorkers will never live in fear.
For the most part, I agree with Stephen Colbert there. New Yorkers, they go on with life. They had their Thanksgiving. They had their Halloween parade in the village last night. And life goes on, except for, of course, the eight people for whom it doesn't. There was a terrorist attack in New York City yesterday. It happened just as we hit the air. We go on the air live at 3 at NicoleSandler.com. Of course, the show is repeated later at on Progressive Voices at 6 Eastern. But we are live from 3 to 4. And during the show, yesterday, Gotta Laugh was here, as she is each Tuesday. And it was near the beginning of the show, and she said, reports of multiple shots fired in Lower Manhattan. This just shows how, at the beginning of an event, when news is breaking, it's often wrong. The shots that were fired, that were reported, were the police firing the guy who drove this truck the wrong way down the West Side Highway bike path. It was a bike and pedestrian path. And he went for a number of blocks, which are large city blocks, hitting people along the way. Again, killing eight, injuring upwards of 11 or 12 or so. In addition to that, of course, Donald Trump almost immediately began tweeting. Let me see if I can pull up some of the tweets he sent out right at the beginning. He originally almost immediately ascribed the attack to ISIS, even though he had no information of the sort. Now we see that the driver left a note in the truck that did say that it was ISIS inspired. But Donald Trump didn't know that when he started tweeting. In New York City, looks like another attack by a very sick and deranged person. Law enforcement is following this closely. And then in all caps, not in the USA. Well, you know, the sad thing about an attack like this, and as we've seen it, we've seen these attacks in other countries as well. There's not a whole lot that can be done, except in areas where there are pedestrian malls, bike paths, places where, you know, large numbers of people are just walking where vehicles are not allowed. If they put up some sort of barriers every few feet, that could have saved those eight people. Just saying. I know they do it in Times Square, which part of Times Square is now, you know, off limits to vehicles. You know, so the past tense of tweet is twote. See, chatters, I know what I'm doing, right? I speak for a living, sort of. But he kept going, right? And now he's moving on. This morning, and he tweeted a whole lot about it, or he twote a lot about it last night and this morning. You know, there's a few tweets in here about about his tax cut program. We'll get to that. Which, by the way, was supposed to be revealed today and now will not be. We'll get to that, too. One thing to think about is that Trump has tweeted more in the last 24 hours about this New York City terrorist attack than he did in the entire month. Today is a month since the Las Vegas shootings, in which 58 people were killed and over 500 were shot and wounded. What's the difference? Well, the shooter in Las Vegas was a white guy who was born and raised here in America. The difference being that this guy yesterday was born in Uzbekistan. And he came in under this diversity visa lottery. Now, Trump went off on it. He said, let's see if I can't find this. He was busy on the Twitter today. Here we go. We are fighting hard for merit-based immigration. No more Democrat lottery systems. We must get much tougher and smarter. And he tagged it Fox and Friends. Here's another one. The terrorist came into our country through what is called the Diversity Visa Lottery Program, a Chuck Schumer beauty. I want merit-based. Well, the truth of the matter is, the diversity visa provision was part of the Immigration Act of 1990. It passed in the Senate in a somewhat bipartisan fashion. It was 89-8, and it was signed into law by George H.W. Bush, by a Republican. So Chuck Schumer might have been in favor of it, but for Trump to lay the blame on Chuck Schumer's feet, or at Chuck Schumer's feet, for this terrorist attack yesterday is reprehensible, as is everything else about this man. Just plain reprehensible. By the way, here's what he said about ending the diversity lottery provision.
I am today starting the process of terminating the diversity lottery program.
The what?
I'm going to ask Congress to immediately initiate work to get rid of this program.
What program?
Diversity. And diversity.
Oh, and diversity. I think it's just the first time he's ever said diversity. So, you know, I guess we can forgive him that one.
Diversity lottery. Sounds nice. It's not nice. It's not good. It's not good. It hasn't been good. We've been against it.
Yeah, you've been against it. So then he took, this is, as he was talking about, he was convening a cabinet meeting. Not only did he go off on that, the diversity lottery program, because he didn't know what the hell it was called, because he doesn't understand the meaning of the word diversity. But then he also took the occasion to blame not only Chuck Schumer, but the Democrats.
So we want to get rid of chain migration. And we've wanted to do that for a long time. And I've been wanting to do it for a long time. And we'll be asking Congress to start working on it immediately. There are bills already about ending chain migration. And we have a lot of good bills in there. We're being stopped by Democrats because they're obstructionists. And honestly, they don't want to do what's right for our country.
The Democrats are the obstructionists, right? I would love to hear Donald Trump comment on what went on the last 8 years when Barack Obama was president and Republicans literally came to the table on nothing, nada, not one single bill. But, you know, he's got selective amnesia there. But maybe the most dangerous thing I heard him say was this.
We have to get tough. We have to get smart. We have to do what's right to protect our citizens. We will never waver in the defense of our beloved country, ever.
Okay.
And we'll never, ever forget the beautiful lives that have been taken from us. That was a horrible event, and we have to stop it, and we have to stop it cold. We also have to come up with punishment that's far quicker.
Quicker?
And far greater.
Greater.
Than the punishment these animals are getting right now.
Really? How do you do that?
They'll go through court for years.
Yeah?
At the end, there'll be who knows what happens. We need quick justice, and we need strong justice. Much quicker and much stronger than we have right now.
Wow.
Because what we have right now is a joke, and it's a laughing stock. And no wonder so much of this stuff
takes place. And I think I can speak for plenty of other countries, too, that are in the same situation.
First of all, I hasten to guess that most other countries do not want Donald Trump speaking for them. I'm pretty confident in making that statement. Secondly, what is he talking about? You know, if he doesn't like the way our criminal justice system works, just upend it. And in fact, they took a few questions before the reporters were shooed out of the room, including this one.
Mr. President, do you want the assailant from New York sent to Gitmo?
Thank you.
Mr. President,
I would certainly consider that. Yes.
Are you considering that now, sir?
I would certainly consider that.
Are you
send him to Gitmo? I would certainly consider that, yes.
And how did the diversity program fit into his plot, do you believe, sir?
Well, they say he came in through that program, so we'll see. We're looking at it, but they say he came in. Look, it's very simple. What we are demanding is merit-based immigration. We want people that are going to help our country. We want people that are going to keep our country safe. We don't want lotteries where the wrong people are in the lotteries. And guess what? Who are the suckers that get those people? And we want a merit-based system. And we do not want chain migration, where somebody like him ultimately will be allowed to bring in many, many members of his family. And we don't want that.
Again, you go about that legislatively. You do that through Congress and you change the law. But the fact remains that this diversity visa provision was signed into law by George H.W. Bush. He wants to blame the Democrats for everything because this is a president who places blame. This is what he does. Something happens. It's not my fault. I didn't do it. They did it. That person did it. The Democrats did it. Chuck Schumer did it. That's what he does. That's his MO. Again, as someone just asked in the chat room, where was this talk after Las Vegas? Nothing. Whenever someone brings up the diversity visa lottery today, you should ask them how that ban on the bump stocks is coming along. Yeah, just a reminder, 1 month ago today, 58 people were killed, were gunned down in cold blood in Las Vegas. 58 people by a guy firing what amounts to an automatic weapon out of a hotel room window into fish in a barrel. He was shooting those people down below. And not one thing has been done. And the president has said very little about it because it's not politically expedient for him. Today is also the day that the Republicans were supposed to unveil their tax bill. That's been postponed until tomorrow, but, you know, we'll see tomorrow. They're still in disagreement over how the cuts will be paid for, and apparently there's a disagreement over the name. You know, Trump, Mr. Master of Branding, reportedly wants to call it the Cut, Cut, Cut Act. And at first I thought it was a spoof. I thought I was kidding, but I read that in an article from ABC News. I forget the reporter's name, but there was a byline on it. He wants to call it the Cut, Cut, Cut Act. Lawmakers don't want to call it a tax cut bill. They want to call it tax reform. And I don't care what you call it. You know, a pig by any other name would still smell as awful. What is on schedule today is that the healthcare exchanges have gone live for 2018. Yep, Wendell Potter is going to be back today. He'll join us today to tell us what we need to know as we attempt to navigate all the changes. And he'll also update us on his new news venture, tarbell.org. But first, let's check in with the news.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It's a very painful day in our city. Horrible tragedy on the West Side. Let me be clear that based on the information we have at this moment, this was an act of terror and a particularly cowardly act of terror aimed at innocent civilians, aimed at people going about their lives who had no idea of what was about to hit them.
A driver plowed a pickup truck down a crowded bike path along the Hudson River in Manhattan on Tuesday, killing 8 people and injuring 11 before being shot by a police officer in what officials are calling the deadliest terrorist attack on New York City since September 11, 2001. The rampage ended when the driver smashed into a school bus, jumped out of his truck, and ran up and down the highway, waving a pellet gun and shouting Allah Akbar, Arabic for God is great, before he was shot in the stomach by police. He's in critical condition.
We, at this moment, based on the information we have, we know of 8 innocent people who have lost their lives and over a dozen more injured. We know that this action was intended to break our spirit, but we also know New Yorkers are strong, New Yorkers are resilient, and our spirit will never be moved by an act of violence, an act meant to intimidate us. We have been tested before as a city, very near the site of today's tragedy, and New Yorkers do not give in the face of these kinds of actions.
Before many details were known, the president began tweeting, blaming the attack on ISIS, and on Wednesday morning, turning the blame toward Chuck Schumer and the Democrats, getting his talking points from Fox.
It appears he's watching Fox News this morning that he notes in his tweets. He writes, "The terrorists came into our country through what is called the Diversity Visa Lottery Program, a Chuck Schumer beauty." He adds, "I want merit-based. We are fighting hard for merit-based immigration, no more lottery systems. We must get much tougher and smarter." Again, as you see there, he notes Fox and Friends. And just moments ago during that commercial break, he tweeted again, writing, in quotes, "Senator Chuck Schumer helping to import Europe's problems, said Colonel Tony Schaefer. We will stop this craziness." Again, noting Fox and Friends. So it appears that that's where he is getting, in effect, his briefing this morning.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio spoke with CNN's Chris Cuomo Wednesday morning.
The last thing the president or anyone else should do is politicize this tragedy. We have to find out what happened here. That work's going to be done by the FBI, by the NYPD, and all of our partners to determine exactly who this man is, what moved him to this horrible act, what's going on here. Is there any bigger ramification? That's what we should be focused on. But look, in the end, the last thing we should do is start casting aspersions on whole races of people or whole religions or whole nations. That only makes the situation worse. The bottom line is anyone who wants to come to this country should be very thoroughly vetted as an individual. But the minute you start generalizing it, especially to a whole religion, then unfortunately we're sending the exact negative message that a lot of our enemies want sent. The terrorists want to affirm that this nation is somehow anti-Muslim. We've got to do the exact opposite.
Wednesday was the day Republicans were set to unveil their tax cut or tax reform plan. But on Tuesday night, they delayed the release until Thursday. At the center of the holdup are questions about how to pay for the proposed $5.5 trillion in tax cuts. Executives from Facebook, Twitter, and Google testified at a hearing of the Senate Judiciary Committee's crime panel on Tuesday. One of the more tense exchanges was between Senator Al Franken and Facebook's general counsel Colin Stretch over whether the company would ban political ads from being purchased with foreign currency.
People are buying ads on your platform with rubles. They're political ads. You put billions of data points together all the time. That's what I hear that these platforms do. They're the most sophisticated things invented by man ever. You can't put together rubles with a political ad and go like, those two data points spell out something bad.
Senator, it's a signal we should have been alert to, and in hindsight, it's one we missed.
Okay, yeah. Will Facebook commit not to accepting political ads paid for with foreign money in the future?
Our goal is to require all political advertisers, regardless of currency, to provide documentation information demonstrating that they're authorized to advertise. The currency signal, I understand your point. It's a signal we should have missed.
You can't say no to that.
The currency signal.
You can't say no to that.
It's very easy to.
Please answer yes or no, sir. I'm asking you a question. Just answer yes or no. Can you do that? You're sophisticated. You're the chief legal counsel for Facebook. Please answer yes or no.
Wednesday, November 1st, is the start of open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, which runs through December 15th, a sign-up period half the length of last year's. The Trump administration also slashed advertising and the budget for navigators who help consumers through the enrollment process. Start early. I got the And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, now heard Tuesday through Friday from 6 to 7 Eastern on the Progressive Voices Network, I hope you'll consider a contribution. My work is 100% listener funded, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. All right, and for a little bit more of what's happening in the news, we turn to our friends at the Talk Media News Service. They're at TalkMediaNews.com. Hello, Ellen Ratner.
Well, hi, how are you? Listen, it's very interesting. The problem with the testimony yesterday on Facebook, et cetera, is they're complaining that it could be used, that they're using rubles, et cetera, that this was bought with rubles. But if you're in the Soviet, former Soviet Union, now Russia, you can go and change your money at any point.
Right.
So the issue is they have to do more vetting. They must really do more transparency because people can switch their currencies very easily.
Sure. And that's a great point.
Okay. There's some other interesting news, which is that both Lindsey Graham and President Trump are now saying that they can, or that President Trump can declare the alleged person who ran into those people and killed eight of them yesterday as an enemy combatant and send them to Guantanamo. That he actually is entitled to do because the person is not an the alleged person is not an American citizen. Now, what we do know is that he belonged to a mosque in Florida, that the imam of the mosque said that he had spoken to him and that he said to him he didn't understand the religion. He also left three children and a wife in New Jersey. I mean, it's really quite staggering when you think about what he did or what he allegedly did and what he left behind him.
It's incredible. The thing is, you know, we'd probably come to trial quicker and come to some sort of resolution on a case if they went through due process rather than throw them in Guantanamo and throw away the key, because there are people still sitting in Gitmo who've never had charges levied against them.
Right, and who have been there since 2000.
That's right.
And one.
That's right.
Absolutely. It's completely crazy. It is interesting that the New York mayor said that there should be extreme vetting, but it should not be based on religion or where a country is from, etc. Now, it is true that the country that this man is from, Uzbekistan, the president of Uzbekistan said that they are going to be fully cooperative. So we'll see what happens on that one. However, the president also said he went after Chuck Schumer, Senator Chuck Schumer, and said that there was a diversity, lottery, and that this was Chuck Schumer's fault. Well, in fact, it was signed into law by the first President Bush, Walker Bush.
That's right. Being bipartisan, it was 89-8 or something like that. And again, this was back in 1990.
Absolutely.
I don't know what the breakdown was, but with a Republican president, I'm guessing it was probably a few more Republicans than Democrats.
Well, probably,
but still,
so
89-8 is pretty bipartisan.
Well, that's for sure, and it was bipartisan. And this idea that they want to get rid of the lottery is insane. So just do extreme vetting of people, no matter who they are, because you don't know. Obviously, we've had Americans born and raised in the United States of America who have done horrible things.
Yeah, and what they're saying about this guy, the alleged driver, is that he became radicalized. He got into religion, the perverted view of Islam that he was, following here in the U.S. It wasn't before he came over.
Well, that's exactly right. That's one thing that is going on. Now, there's another thing that's going on. The president has said that he wants to open up the Arctic Wildlife Refuge. Well, the Alaska Wildlife Refuge, a liberal group, basically said, hey, he thinks he's going to get, $2,400 an acre, and this is going to go into the national treasury. Well, in fact, it's less than $200 an acre that they get. And so what makes them think that this is going to work? It's probably not going to work.
And yet they're talking about drilling in these pristine lands. It's really, really sad.
And causing a lot of problems.
That's right.
Okay. there is more going on, there is now Nikki Haley made a statement on Cuba. Last year, the United Nations just passed. They didn't vote one way or the other, but now they're voting to continue closing off Cuba. They said that this would make the United States not connected to the rest of the world that believes in bringing Cuba in the fold. Now, there is that question of so many Americans who lost their hearing, some of our diplomats and their families, but Cuba says that they knew nothing about it. Our CIA said, well, that's impossible. They know everything that's going on there, but maybe they don't. We just don't know.
That's still the weirdest story ever. And Cuba's playing dumb, and nobody seems to know what happened. But the fact is, people had hearing loss and more. I mean, they're in pain. There's something went on.
Something is clearly going on, and something clearly did go on. We just don't know. Okay. Now, there's also the president has released the issue on the opioid crisis. And one of the things they want to do is put more advertising about not using drugs. But we know from the the Just Say No campaign of Nancy Reagan and stuff that did not work. In fact, it made drugs more interesting for people, for young people who basically said, hey, wow, that sounds good. I want to try it. And that's pretty much what happened, or what they're afraid is going to happen if they just put in money on that.
Yeah, and the other thing is, in the fund to fight opioids, there's something like $57,000 when we need...
I mean, there's no money
there's
whatsoever.
Nothing. And he thinks an ad
campaign... And they're leaving it up
campaign.
To the states to do something about it, but the states don't have that kind of money.
Right. And $57,000 in something that costs, many, many billions of dollars a year to fight. And there's $57,000 in the account. And he's talking about an ad campaign is going to do the trick.
I mean, give me a break for sure. Right.
Unbelievable.
I mean, people need to know what they need to in my view, if you're going to do any ad campaign, have people speaking on camera about what addiction did to their lives. That's how people are going to connect and have young people doing it.
Right, but that doesn't help the people who are already addicted, who are already strung out.
People
right?
who are already addicted need treatment, and they need money for that kind of treatment.
Right, all the ads in
it
the world
happen for free.
Are not going to help them. Right.
Okay, a few other things. On a bipartisan bill, Speaker Ryan and Patty Murray have unveiled a bipartisan bill to use evidence-based policy. That means that before a bill comes that may involve something with actual data, that they're going to take a look at that data. That would, of course, deal with climate change. You and I know that.
Right.
But they would take a look at that data before they made a bill.
Wow.
And that's what they want to do. And that makes a lot of sense to me.
And Paul Ryan is in on that?
Paul Ryan is in on that. Well, it's interesting. He made a speech the other night to the congressional correspondents. And although it didn't go after Trump or anything, it was very clear that he believes in freedom of speech and that he's supportive. And you could read between the lines. So
wow. That's kind of shocking.
He actually made a speech the other day, which he made some jokes, and it was clearly pointed at Trump. So they're not the best of friends.
No, there's that. But he hasn't, he hasn't been very vociferous in criticizing him either.
Right. Now, one other thing that's interesting is Sam Clovis. He is up for a job at the Agriculture Department, and he also met with Mueller's people. So this is very interesting because Mueller is obviously closing in on some Trump people. Trump also said that he is going to make a big difference in the courts of the United States of America. We'll see what happens on that front.
That we'll wait to see. The jury's out on that one.
I don't even think the jury's out. I think it's pretty clear what's going to happen. It's not a pretty situation.
No.
Now, this is something you may know about, and I don't know about because you're in that neck of the woods, but former Florida Congresswoman Corinne Brown is seeking a delay of her sentencing. She lost her case on 18 charges she was found guilty of. It's scheduled for November 16th. She'd like to put it off. She said there was damage from Hurricane Katrina, but the hurricane, as well as her health.
She's not from my part of Florida. I honestly don't know a whole lot about Corinne Brown other than she was found guilty.
And Miami Beach Mayor Phil Levine, who I actually met at the New Hampshire primary, and my cousin is one of his attorneys on real estate, said that he is going to announce to be a candidate for governor of Florida.
Yeah.
Now, you know, it's interesting. He says he came out with this sort of liberal line, but he's known as being more of a centrist, and he's also known of supporting President Trump.
Yeah, he's. I don't know about Trump. I know he's an opportunist, and I'm not a big fan of his. So, you know, that is not great news to me that he'll run. But it is what
right.
It is.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, yes, we will. Ellen Ratner from the Talk Media News Service, talkmedianews.com. Always a pleasure, Ellen. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, today is the day that the health exchange is open. So who do we call on? We're going to talk to our old friend, Wendell Potter, in just a couple of minutes. So stick around. It's Nicole Sandler at nicolesandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
All right. Nicole Sandler back with you. And as I mentioned, today is the day that the healthcare exchanges are going live. And so I couldn't think of anyone I'd rather talk with than Wendell Potter. Of course, he is a former health insurance executive. He's the author of Deadly Spin and Nation on the Take. Wendell's newest project is Tarbell.org, which examines how money and politics impacts millions of Americans. Tarbell.org has begun its crowdfunding campaign, which will run until November 21st. And Wendell Potter, welcome back to the show.
Nicole, thanks so much. Thanks for having me back.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and I'm very excited to find out how things are going with Tarbell.
Well, they're going great. We've raised quite a bit of money already. More than 1,000 people have visited, have not only visited the site, but signed up to be members of Tarbell. They're making donations, and I encourage others to do the same. We will go through... Actually, it's November the 23rd for a crowdfunding campaign to support nonprofit journalism.
Well, that's great. So the money that you raise will not only fund the infrastructure of the site, but it will pay for your correspondence and everybody else that works there. The focus of Tarbell, if I understand it correctly, is going to be about money. Because, as well, the old adage goes, follow the money, right?
That's right. But we're going to be looking at it in a way that very few journalists do. We're not going to be focusing on money and politics by just scrutinizing the politicians. We're going to be focusing and scrutinizing those who write them the big checks. And in many cases, those checks come from big corporations and other special interests. And they're just simply not being held accountable, as I know they should be. As you know, I spent 2 decades working for health insurance companies, and I know what I'm talking about here. I know how they spend money in so many different ways to manipulate public opinion and public policy and elections. And I'm committed to shining a light on that to help people understand how it happens and what we can do about it.
Do you know if anybody has ever tried this before, crowdfunding a new news organization? Because that's...
Yes, they have. In fact, we're doing something that has been done very successfully in Europe. Now, what we're doing is somewhat different and unique in the United States. We've seen crowdfunding for journalism projects that usually spend just to raise money to pay for a journalist's work on a specific story. But we're doing it in a much more ambitious way. We're doing it, as you said, to raise funds to pay for journalists on a freelance basis and to be on staff rather than just for a specific story. The crowdfunding campaigns that have been successful in Europe are still thriving. They are in many different countries, France, the Netherlands, Germany, Spain. Yeah. So we think if they can do it, we can do it too.
Absolutely. Wendell Potter is with us. Again, we got to know you, Wendell, back during the days when the Affordable Care Act was being written. We'll get back to Tarbell, but being that today is the day that the open enrollment begins for the Affordable Care Act, there are millions of people who are in the same boat that I'm in. I have my insurance through Obamacare. And actually, I think I told you this before, Obamacare actually saved my life. In the summer of 2016, I was diagnosed with lung cancer. And the only reason I had insurance was because of the Affordable Care Act, because, as a middle-aged woman, I don't know anybody, you know, I will turn 58 on Saturday. I don't know anyone my age who doesn't have a pre-existing condition. Because as you get older, you know, things go wrong. And the insurance companies, as you well know, consider anything a pre-existing condition. In fact, before the Affordable Care Act, I remember hearing stories of people whose policies were canceled when they got sick because the insurance company, for instance, had looked through their original application and said, well, you didn't tell us you had acne when you were 14.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That was a very common practice before the Affordable Care Act was passed. Insurance companies routinely did that. They actually, when someone had high medical expenses, all of a sudden they scrutinized their applications looking for ways or reasons, and flimsy ones like not reporting acne, just so that they could rescind your policy. That was a term that they used, and that's illegal now. But, you know, one thing you said I wanted to comment on, no one really knows when they might get a dread diagnosis like cancer. And it can also be when you're young. A few years ago, spoke to this organization called, it's a wonderful organization, supporting young cancer victims and survivors, called Stupid Cancer. Hmm. And even young people, I think a lot of folks, when they're young, think that, well, I'm healthy, I haven't had an accident, my luck is good. But you just never know when you're going to get that awful diagnosis that you've got a very serious disease. And cancer, as you know, and many other serious illnesses are so expensive to treat that a lot of people who don't have insurance wind up in bankruptcy. And in many cases, people just don't get the care that they need and die prematurely.
Right. And you know, that was one of the great things about the Affordable Care Act. I'm against the mandate as a principle, but the idea of getting everybody insured, having universal health care, is a great goal to have. That's, of course, what Medicare for All would give us. But, you know, I've got a daughter who's 18. She's had insurance under CHIP, under the Children's Health Insurance Plan, which we are now, I think it's 32 days since the government let that lapse. And there's been no word on anything. Do you know what the status of that is?
Well, it still is in that uncertainty, that period of uncertainty. I know that there is interest among lawmakers of both parties to reauthorize that program and fund it. But because we had such gridlock in Washington, it's just one of those things that has fallen victim to that. It is something that is so vital to the health and well-being of our children. That this is something that's unconscionable, that they're letting this lapse this way.
Right. And so, I mean, I approach everything as, you know, through my life, knowing that whatever I'm going through, there are millions of other people going through something similar. So my daughter is 18. And she's had her insurance through the Florida Healthy Kids Program, which is the Florida's CHIP program. And so far, I've not gotten any notice in the mail that you know, it's canceled, but the funds are running out. My question is, and I don't know who I can even ask, because with the Affordable Care Act, the Trump administration has cut funding for the navigators, for the people who help you through the process. What happens? I mean, she allegedly is going to be covered until her 19th birthday. But I have no way of knowing that. And if open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act is only through December 15th, what happens if I don't put her on my plan now?
That's, and no one should be in that, making those decisions or being placed in that that kind of a predicament. And but people are, you are, and many others, because of this uncertainty. And that, I want to mention the word uncertainty one more time, because it is the reason why a lot of insurance companies are raising their rates for 2018. It's not because of anything other than the fact, well, some medical costs have gone up, and health insurers just simply cannot control medical costs, despite what they say. But a big reason for the increase for 2018 is because of the uncertainty of what lawmakers in Washington might do and what the Trump administration might do. It's and insurers hate that. And so what they've done for 2018 is increase premiums based on a worst case scenario that the Trump administration will cut off some funding that insurers use to help offset people's out-of-pocket expenses. So it's just a very difficult time for a lot of people right now.
It really is. So this morning, I got an email from the health insurance marketplace saying that I can now go online and look at and see what my premium is going to be. And I was getting ready for today's show, so I haven't had time to get to it yet. But what it did say, there's a big red in red letters with an exclamation point that my premiums are going to go up significantly. But there's still no way to know, you know, what kind of subsidy I'll get, because we don't know if there will be a subsidy. Are you clear on what's going to happen, or is anybody?
Well, here's what I understand. Even if the Trump administration decides to eliminate the so-called cost-sharing reductions, the subsidies that help people with their out-of-pocket expenses, insurers are still on the hook to cover that. They may not get the payments they've been getting from the government, but an executive order really can't change the law that significantly. They can cut off funding, but the insurance companies are obligated to pay them. That's one of the examples of why premium increases have gone up, is because of that uncertainty and the anticipation that the Trump administration would do this. Insurers are raising their premiums to offset the cost of what they are obligated to pay to help people with their out-of-pocket expenses.
One thing I think people don't remember, and people have short memories, is before Obamacare came into effect, and I hate calling it Obamacare because it is the Affordable Care Act, and I really think a big part of the problem is that the Democrats were too quick to adopt the moniker. And with this president, anything with Obama's name on it, he wants to undo. If it was called Trump Care, he'd have no problem with it. So I do refer to it as the Affordable Care Act. What people don't realize is before that came into effect, number one, people like me were unable to buy health insurance. But on top of that, premiums rose every year as they are now, and probably at a higher clip than they are than they have under the Affordable Care Act.
Right. I wrote in my first book, Deadly Spin, about the experience my son encountered. He was in his 20s at that time, but he had his own individual policy. And in 2009, toward the end of the year, this was, you know, the year before Obamacare was passed, he got a notice from his insurer late in the year that his premium would go up 65% on January the 1st. And that's just and it wasn't just him. They sent that same notice to almost all of the subscribers that were in the plan that he had. So that's just one anecdote. It was so prevalent. And like you said earlier, not only that, but insurance companies could declare you uninsurable. They could refuse to set, not only could they drop you because of an error that you might have made or some omission in your application, they could refuse to sell you coverage in the first place if you'd been sick in the past. That's now illegal. We don't want to go back to those days.
But with the executive orders that the president has signed, there are ways that he's lessening those protections. The way the premiums are going up. Again, now I just opened the email I got. My monthly premium will be significantly higher, is what it says. With in red font with a red exclamation point. So, for all the criticisms they made where Obama said, if you like your doctors, you can keep your doctors. I'm in the position where I'm probably going to have to find a new policy that I'm not going to be able to keep my doctors who treated me for lung cancer.
Yeah, this is, you and I both have said the Affordable Care Act is far from perfect. Mm-hmm. And one of the big problems that I had with this, I did say it was better than not passing it, was that, you know, it kept insurance companies in place the way they had been. And they still have enormous power over our lives. And they still have the ability to jack up those rates. Not as much as before, but they still can do it. And I will also reiterate that we've been fed this lie, this myth, that insurance companies are necessary because they hold down costs. They don't. They actually don't have an incentive to do that, which is probably a topic for another day. But not only can they not, they don't really want to. But we have what we have.
We do. And it seems like we're going back to what we had before. Can you get a handle on why they're telling people that this would in any way, shape or form be better? I get that some people under the Affordable Care Act, they got stuck, you know, depending on what your income is, you could get stuck with ridiculously high deductibles. And as you said, far from perfect. But going right back to what we had before it just seems to be counterproductive on every front.
It is. And we collectively as a society have short memories. We don't remember what it was like. Many people didn't experience the worst before the Affordable Care Act was passed, so they really weren't exposed to it. But you could have been exposed to it at any day with a diagnosis or being injured. And the problem is also ideology. A lot of politicians and people think that the government doesn't have a role to play in health care. They just don't understand health care and health insurance enough. If they did, they wouldn't be saying those things. But there's a lot of ignorance, and a lot of it is willful ignorance, because politicians get a lot of money from insurance companies and others in health care. They want to protect and maintain and enhance a profitable status quo.
So, Wendell Potter, so say Tarbell.org has launched and you're covering this. In what way would you be covering this you know, the fact? I was really kind of surprised that today I didn't see more in the news about the fact that the exchanges go live today, that healthcare.gov is now live. I was shocked that it's nowhere. Now, granted, there's a lot of news, and this is life in the Trump era. There's always something. Plus, we had an awful terror attack yesterday. But really, I mean, I get tons of, not only I see the newspapers, but I get tons of news alerts and morning briefings and stuff. And I saw so little mention of the fact that today is the day that open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act begins. How would Tarbell cover this?
Well, very aggressively. And in fact, because there is so little coverage, I'm writing a piece right now for the Huffington Post and Medium on this very thing. And I thank you very much for your interest and willingness to do what you're doing today, that for us to have this conversation. It is so important. But the media, the reason I'm starting Tarbell.org is because the media so often does not cover what needs to be covered. And they don't go after and hold the big special interest as accountable as they need to be held. And that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to help people understand why, for example, our healthcare system is the way it is, and what we can do about it, and what they need to know about it to understand Obamacare. As you may know, I wrote an ebook a few years ago called Obamacare, What's in It for Me, What Everyone Needs to Know About the Affordable Care Act. And I did that because the media has done such a lousy job from the very beginning of explaining how people benefit, how the law affects them.
It's very true. And now the budget's been slashed for education to alert people on, you know, how to do it, because, well, it's open sabotage right now. They don't want you to know. They want enrollment to be down. So there's an end to this means.
Well, there is. And for political gain, or at least I think short-term political gain, politicians some politicians are really trying to create a situation in which the exchanges will collapse. I don't think they will, but what they're trying to do is destroy it if they possibly can, one way or another.
Interestingly, this year now, the Obamacare exchanges are more stable than they ever have been.
Really?
Insurance companies need to break even. They want to make a profit, but they have to break even or they can't stay in the business. And they've now figured out how to price the policies in ways that more than covers or offsets what they pay in medical claims. It took a while for that to happen because it was a newly structured marketplace. And things are better. But here we are with the Trump administration and some people in Congress trying to destabilize it purposely.
Right. And they have a lot of people thinking that the Affordable Care Act has already been repealed, that don't
right.
know about it. And, you know, this time last year, there were TV ads everywhere. There were pop-ups on, you know, on your computer where you would see to open
right.
enrollment starts November 1st. That's the reason why I did want to talk with you today, because to let people know it is still there. Again, I've got to, you know, map out a few hours to sit down and go through the exchange and see what I can afford. And it truly terrifies me because I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to find anything I can afford, especially with the doctors that I want to see. You know, and that I lay right at Donald Trump's feet. You know, that goes right to him.
Absolutely. And also know that one thing that you may see premium increases, but still something else that he can't do with an executive order. Depending on your income, you still are going to be eligible and will receive financial assistance with paying your premiums. So the executive order that he signed relates to kind of the back end, the out-of-pockets that you get help for. It's just so mean and so stupid, I think, for to see what we're seeing right now with attempts to sabotage it. But people need to know that even if they're getting that red alert, depending on their income, they still are going to be eligible for help to cover their premiums and their out-of-pocket expenses.
Well, that's good to know. So I will keep that in mind as I go through my homework. Wendell Potter is with us. When do you plan on launching? Tarbell.org is up. If you go there, you'll see news for a new age, crowdfunding to reveal how the system is rigged and what you can do about it. The background on it, there's a video that you recorded. It gives a lot of background information. When do you plan on the news gathering and news breaking component to launch?
We're going to have a series of reports that will actually be published and posted during the crowdfunding campaign itself. We hope to be up and running and have the funds we need to hire a number of journalists by the first of the year. That's when we hope to have everything in place to be able to produce the kind of journalism that we're talking about here.
Now, you've told my listeners the story before, but it's a great story. Where the name Tarbell came from?
Tarbell is named in honor of one of the most important investigative reporters in American history. And her name has been lost to history, unfortunately, in many ways. Ida Tarbell is the name of the reporter. She grew up in northwestern Pennsylvania. She was active writing in the early 1900s during what was often referred to as the Gilded Age and the age of robber barons. And she took on one of the biggest, in fact, it was the biggest corporate monopoly of her time and one of the biggest in American history, John D. Rockefeller Standard Oil Company. She knew from personal experience, from her family's experience, just how ruthless and unfair the company's business practices were and how it got to become a monopoly. So she wrote a series of articles that became a book. It was put into a book, and it was so impactful, so well done, so well researched that it led to the breakup of Standard Oil Company and to very important antitrust and campaign finance laws. It really curbed the power of big corporations. And regrettably, we are seeing that we're, again, in another age like that in which corporate power is growing unchecked and unscrutinized. So we're going to be doing what Ida did in the 21st century.
And it'll be nonprofit, reader-funded, independent, no advertising. This is a pretty big mountain you're climbing here.
it's very ambitious. We think we can do it. But nothing has been, I don't think anything I've done is more important than this. We've seen a decline in journalism and watchdog journalism at a time when it's most needed. It's one of the reasons why corporate power is growing increasingly unchecked. And we've seen thousands of journalists losing their jobs. So there are a lot of journalists out there who would like to work for us. So we know that's not going to be a problem, but it's a sad time for journalism. But I think there's reason to think that what we're doing and what others are doing, we can see a resurgence of good journalism. I think the future will be nonprofit journalism. We believe that what we're doing is kind of at the cutting edge of, as we say, new journalism for a new age.
Yeah, you know, we're in a weird place when it comes to journalism because we have a president who takes any work of journalism. And I think the New York Times and the Washington Post, for the most part, are doing better work than they've done in years. They have a great subject to write about, and there's a lot of dirt there apparently, and so they are doing their jobs. But we have a president who's calling them out. Anything that's unfavorable to him, he's calling out as fake news. Anything that's favorable to him, that is what, you know, in fact, he said something yesterday that was so inane. He said while he's on his Asia trip, he's going to have people from the administration go around to the local and regional stations that are more credible than the big networks. And of course, what he's talking about now is Sinclair Broadcasting, who's buying out, as long as it's approved, which it looks like it will be, buying out all the Tribune stations. So, but their programming, their commentary is being dictated to them from above high, and it's a very right wing group who's got these must run segments of commentary that people who are watching their local TV stations think is news. They don't get the difference between news and opinion. So
that's right. Trump has usurped the term fake news to fit his own needs, and he's using it to label any kind of journalism or any kind of journalism organization he doesn't like as fake news or a purveyor of fake news. And it is, as we, I think most of us know, it is just obviously not true. The other thing is, in addition to Sinclair, which is huge, and you're right, ideological, very right wing, we've seen a massive consolidation in ownership of the media in recent years. Just six corporations own 90% of American media, which is astonishing when you start to think about it.
It is. And that really started, I hate to say it, with Bill Clinton and the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
I remember it
because I worked in radio my entire adult life. And, it used to be one company could own, 7 a.m., 7 FM stations and 7 TV stations around the country and no more than one each per market. Now they're talking about relaxing the ownership rules when it comes to newspapers and media consolidation in one market. And there's a real danger when one voice, when one entity controls all the voices.
We're already seeing that in my home state of Tennessee. Gannett, the big newspaper chain, the big media chain, owns now all the big papers in Memphis, Nashville, and Knoxville, and some other markets, smaller markets, they've laid off a lot of reporters in every one of those cities, and it's being centralized. The people in Memphis are not getting the kind of local news they once did, and the same is true in the other markets as well, too, nor are they getting the kind of investigative journalism that is needed. That's been especially diminished in recent years. A lot of the companies have laid off reporters, and a lot of those that have been laid off have been the ones we need.
Of course.
The investigative reporters.
Well, and hopefully Tarbell.org will bring them back. If people want to contribute, how does that work? They go to Tarbell.org and click the button?
Yes. It's very easy. It's like pressing a button. It's like doing anything you do online to make a purchase or make a donation. If you prefer to send a check, there's information there, too. We're based in Philadelphia, just a within a stone's throw of Independence Hall, where our country began. We purposely didn't want to be in New York and Washington. So it's easy. And we really hope that more people will see the value of independent, pull-no-punches journalism and support it. So thanks very much for mentioning that.
Always a pleasure. Wendell Potter, again, find him at tarbell.org. You can find at Tarbell on Twitter as well as at Wendell Potter as too. Wendell, thank you again. It's great talking with you.
Always, Nicole. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. And with that, I'm hopefully tonight going to play around with healthcare.gov and figure out how much they're going to get me for. See you tomorrow, everyone.